I mean, think about it like this. If you hire an assistant and you have to explicitly tell them, you know, every single micro step to do their job, open the email, read it, draft a reply, click send, have you actually saved any real time?
Honestly, no. You've just, you've completely changed your job from actually doing the work to just micromanaging someone else.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Because you're still the bottleneck, right?
Yeah. The assistant just sitting there waiting for your prompt. So the whole system only moves as fast as you can, you know, dictate the instructions.
But so what happens when that assistant just stops waiting for prompts? Like, what happens when it actually anticipates what needs to be done, fixes its own mistakes, and just executes all this stuff in the background while you're literally asleep?
That is the big question.
It is. And welcome to the deep dive. Because today, we are looking at a stack of new data that basically points to one unavoidable conclusion. The chatbot era, as we know it, is totally dead.
It really is.
We're digging into this highly comprehensive tech report from Tikkun Morning. It's dated May 20, 2026. And it covers a bunch of massive announcements, mostly coming out of Google I.O. 2026, alongside some really pivotal updates from Apple and the whole cybersecurity startup world.
And, you know, the through line connecting all these different sources for you today is this major transition. Mm-hmm. We're moving from artificial intelligence that just talks to you to AI that autonomously works for you.
Yeah, the AI agent age. And our mission today is to unpack exactly how the shift operates under the hood, how it's going to transform your daily workflows, and honestly, the very real vulnerabilities we're exposing ourselves to right now.
Yeah, the risks are definitely there.
Big time. So let's just start with Google. During I.O., their CEO, Sundar Pichai, basically drew a line in the sand. He said, and I quote, "We no longer want to talk to AI. We want AI to work for us." And they backed that up by launching Gemini 3.5 Flash.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
Because historically, there has always been this this ironclad rule in AI development when it comes to speed versus capability.
Right. You had to pick one.
Exactly. You could run a massive, highly capable model, you know, usually branded as a pro or ultra tier. But that required insane compute power, took a long time to generate an answer, and it was really expensive.
Yeah.
Or you could opt for a Flash or Turbo model. Mm-hmm. Those were lightning fast and super cheap, but they were basically lightweight versions. They would, you know, hallucinate way more often or just completely fail at complex multi-step logic.
But if you look at the numbers from this Tikkun Morning report, Gemini 3.5 Flash just completely breaks that rule. I mean, it is actually outperforming Google's flagship 3.1 Pro model.
Yeah, the performance jump is wild.
And the speed is clocked at 300 tokens per second. Just to put that in human terms for a second, that is the equivalent of writing 1,000 lines of complex software code in under 10 seconds.
Wow.
Right. It's four times faster than OpenAI's GPT-4 Turbo. Mm. And the pricing is just, it's disruptive. It's 15 cents for input and 60 cents for output per million tokens. And OpenAI is sitting at like $10 and $30 for that same volume.
The speed and the cost are super impressive, sure. But the benchmark it's hitting is actually the real story here. Flash scored 76.2% on something called Terminal Bench.
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to challenge that a bit.
Go for it.
We see these arbitrary benchmark scores touted by tech companies all the time, right? And they rarely translate to actual real-world utility. Like, an AI scoring high on a multiple-choice test doesn't mean it can build a database for my company.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But Terminal Bench is fundamentally different from those static multiple-choice tests. It evaluates autonomous agentic coding.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means this isn't just a test of whether the AI can spit out a little text snippet of Python. It measures a loop.
Mm-hmm.
So the AI is given a goal. It writes the code. It opens a terminal. It runs that code, and then it inevitably hits an error.
Which happens to human coders all the time.
All the time. Now, a traditional model stops right there and waits for the human to fix the error. But an agentic model reads the error output itself, realizes, oh, I'm missing a specific library, writes a new command to install that dependency, refactors its original code, and runs it again.
Wait, it does all of that without you typing anything?
Completely on its own. It iterates. Huh? So hitting over 76% on that specific benchmark at a speed where it's generating and testing these iterations in literally milliseconds, it means the barrier to software development is no longer the machine's processing speed.
Okay, so Flash is basically telling the industry that the fast food is now better and cheaper than the Michelin star meal.
Yeah, that's a pretty good look at it.
So the machine can do the heavy lifting for developers. But the report highlights that Google isn't just pointing this at enterprise software. They also announced Gemini Spark, which takes this exact same autonomous capability and points it at your personal life.
Yeah, Spark is a very different beast.
right? It's a 247 AI assistant. But instead of just running an app on your phone, it runs on a dedicated Google Cloud virtual machine, meaning it operates even when your devices are totally powered down in a drawer.
It's always on.
Always. It's constantly managing your emails, searching for hidden subscription hikes on your credit card statements, updating your Google Docs based on new incoming data. And it's rolling out next week for AI Ultra subscribers for around $20 to $30 a month.
But just think about the architectural shift happening here. With a traditional chatbot, the data exchange is totally contained. You open the app, ask a question, get an answer, and close the app. The AI goes back to sleep.
Right.
Spark is proactive.
Yeah.
For it to function the way they claim, it has to continuously monitor the live fire hose of your personal data.
Which brings up a massive glaring issue.
The privacy aspect.
Yes. I mean, wait. If Spark is a digital employee that never sleeps and has total unmitigated access to my Gmail and my credit card statements to do its job, isn't that just a massive privacy nightmare waiting to happen? I'm handing the keys to my entire digital existence over to a Google server.
This raises an incredibly important question. You are navigating the ultimate trade-off of the AI agent era right now. Immense convenience demands total trust.
Yeah, but do I want to trust them with all of that?
Well, Google relies on a cloud-based architecture for Spark because, frankly, running a continuous proactive AI locally on your phone would just drain your battery in an hour and completely melt your processor.
That's true. The hardware just isn't there yet for phones.
Right. So offloading that to a dedicated virtual machine is technologically brilliant. But you are absolutely right. It requires your most sensitive, real-time data to constantly live and breathe in their cloud environment.
It's a huge leap of faith for the user. But, I mean, if you do take that leap, the capabilities are pretty staggering. And let's trace the logic of this report a bit further. If we have agents that are fast enough and smart enough to write, test, and deploy complex code autonomously, what stops someone who has literally zero programming knowledge from building real software?
Nothing. Nothing stops them. The technical execution is just no longer the barrier to entry. We are moving from AI assisting developers to AI literally serving as the entire development team for non-programmers.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The report details Google AI Studio and Android CLI 1.0. So Google AI Studio allows anyone to build a native Android app in about 5 minutes using plain English prompts.
5 minutes, that's all it takes.
Yeah, you just type what you want the app to do and the system generates the underlying architecture. And I think we need to clarify what native means in this context.
Yeah, it's an important distinction.
Because it's not just generating some clunky mobile website wrapped up to look like an app. It is writing in Kotlin and Jetpack Compose. That is the exact same high-level toolkit that professional engineers use to build apps like Spotify or Instagram.
Exactly. And it gives you a browser emulator so you can test the app immediately and then push it directly to your phone via USB.
I feel like this is basically the Photoshop moment for coding. You know?
How so?
Well, Photoshop didn't destroy the graphic design industry when it came out. It just gave creatives a superpower. It let them focus on the vision instead of the tedious mechanics of cutting up physical photos.
That maps perfectly to what this is doing. It's a huge democratization of creation. I mean, think about a high school teacher with zero technical background. They notice their students struggling with a math concept, and they can just sit down on a Tuesday night and literally vibe code a custom, fully functional study app tailored perfectly to their curriculum.
Vibe coding. I love that. But what about the professionals? Do they just become obsolete?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And that's where Android CLI 1.0 comes in. This allows AI agents to directly hook into Android Studio, which is the professional environment. The agent can autonomously refactor thousands of lines of legacy code while the human developer just watches and directs.
So it shifts the human's role completely?
Exactly. You aren't writing boilerplate code anymore. You are acting as the systems director. It multiplies your productivity.
I do wonder about the quality control, though. Like, if anyone can generate an app in 5 minutes, doesn't the Google Play Store just become a landfill of a billion identical, glitchy habit trackers?
That's a very valid concern. But the sources do address that. A Google spokesperson, Mia Carter, clarified that apps built via AI Studio still have to pass the exact same strict human and automated review standards to get published.
Okay, so it lowers the barrier to creation, but not the bar for quality.
Right. The output still requires human curation and an actually good idea if you want it to succeed.
That makes sense. But there is a much darker side to all this democratization.
Always is.
Yeah. If a tool allows a well-meaning teacher to generate flawless native software instantly, that exact same tool empowers bad actors to generate flawless, highly complex malware just as fast.
Oh, without a doubt. If an AI can perfectly mimic a senior developer's code structure, it can perfectly mimic your CEO's communication style.
And the Tekken report highlights this alarming statistic. AI-powered phishing is up over 300%. The AI analyzes the targets, crash these emails that are totally error-free, incredibly personalized, and practically free to mass produce.
And the cost of a successful attack currently averages around $4.65 million for a company.
Which is wild. So to combat this, a cybersecurity startup called Ocean just emerged from stealth with $28 million in funding, and it's founded by Yoav Finkelstein, who was a researcher for Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system.
And Finkelstein's background is actually highly relevant here, because missile defense is entirely about split-second intent recognition and interception. He is taking that exact philosophy and applying it to enterprise networks.
But here is the thing that surprised me about the report. To fight these really advanced AI attacks, Ocean is not using a massive model like GPT-4. They built a small language model, an SLM.
Yes.
So what does this all mean? Why would a cutting-edge security company choose a constrained small language model over a massive, powerful one to fight these threats?
One word, latency. In cybersecurity, time is literally the only metric that matters. If an employee clicks a malicious link or an impersonated email hits an inbox, you have milliseconds to intercept
Wait,
it.
2 seconds.
Milliseconds. If you have to take that email, send it out to a massive cloud-based LLM with hundreds of billions of parameters, wait for it to process the data, and send an answer back. The attack has already happened. The network is compromised.
So a massive smart model is actually a huge liability in a live firefight.
Exactly. Think of a large language model as doing a comprehensive background check on a person's entire life history before letting them into a secure building. It's thorough, sure, but it takes way too much time.
And the SLM.
Ocean's small language model is the bouncer at the door. It's just reading body language and quickly checking the watermark on a fake ID. The SLM doesn't need to know how to write a sonnet or summarize the French Revolution.
Right, doesn't need all that baggage.
It is trained exclusively on organizational communication patterns and intent. So by stripping away all that general knowledge, the model is small enough to run locally and analyze intent in under 100 milliseconds.
Wow. And the report notes that this hyperspecialization actually drops their false positive rate below 2%.
Because it's not just looking for bad spelling or known malicious links anymore. Traditional signature-based security, where the system just checks a list of known bad code, is completely dead.
Because AI mutates the malware too fast now.
Exactly. The only way to defeat an AI that's generating a novel attack is with another AI analyzing the underlying intent in real time. We are in a full-blown AI arms race.
It's fascinating. And that tension you mentioned between cloud processing and localized processing is popping up everywhere. Ocean uses an SLM to avoid the latency of the cloud. And while they are doing that to protect our digital infrastructure, Apple is applying that exact same localized AI philosophy to solve profoundly physical human problems right on the hardware.
Oh, the accessibility updates in this report are just incredible. The hardware integration Apple is pulling off right now is arguably the most impactful real-world application of AI agents we've seen yet.
Yeah. So Apple announced a new feature for the Vision Pro headset that lets users control a power wheelchair using literally only their eyes. It integrates with existing hardware systems, like Tolt and LUCI.
It's amazing.
You just look at specific zones in your field of vision, and the AI translates that intent into 8 directional controls and speed adjustments. There's even a visual emergency start. You just look at a stop symbol or close your eyes, and the chair halts.
Think about the journey of this tech. We are talking about eye tracking technology, originally engineered so people could just comfortably scroll through a virtual movie menu. And it's now being deployed to give people genuine physical mobility and independence.
It's the best possible use case.
It really is. And what's fascinating here is the complete contrast in architectural philosophy between Apple and Google. Earlier, we talked about how Google Spark defaults to the cloud, right?
Right.
They want continuous integration with external data, and they accept the privacy and connectivity trade-offs to get it.
Yeah, you hand over your data for the convenience.
Apple completely rejects that approach for these features.
The report really emphasizes that. Apple's AI features the wheelchair control, the enhanced voiceover, the smart magnifier run entirely on device. The AI lives on the silicon chips right inside the headset.
You have to consider the insane engineering constraints required to make that happen. They have to run a model capable of interpreting real-time, three-dimensional eye-tracking data, translate it into physical motor commands, and do all of that without overheating a computer strapped to a user's face.
Or draining the battery in 20 minutes.
Right. But that localized processing isn't just them flexing their engineering muscles. It is a life-or-death necessity for this application.
Oh, absolutely. Because if an AI is literally driving your wheelchair through a busy crosswalk, you cannot rely on a spotty Wi-Fi connection.
Exactly. A momentary drop in cellular signal cannot mean you lose the ability to hit the brakes. You need guaranteed execution, zero latency, and absolute privacy. Apple's strict adherence to on-device AI is basically the only way an application with physical stakes like that is even viable.
It's a phenomenal achievement. But, you know, we've covered a lot of ground today that sounds like pure science fiction. We've got AI autonomously iterating code, building apps in 5 minutes, fighting cyber wars in milliseconds, and steering wheelchairs with a glance.
The future is here.
It feels like it. But lest we convince ourselves that we've finally arrived at some flawless technological utopia, we really have to look at the foundational plumbing of the internet, which honestly is still incredibly fragile.
Oh, yeah. This is the reality check the industry desperately needs right now.
The great Search Console bug of 2026.
Yep.
So the Techin report highlights this ongoing widespread issue with Google Search Console. Basically, since late April of 2026, a bug has completely prevented developers from adding new service accounts to Search Console and Google Analytics 4. It just spits back an email not found error.
It's so frustrating.
And it sounds incredibly mundane compared to eye tracking wheelchairs, I know. But this error essentially breaks automated reporting and API integrations for new web projects globally. The picker. There is currently no timeline for a fix. Historically, this kind of thing can take 2 to 6 weeks to resolve, and literally none of the temporary manual workarounds function for automated tasks. So we basically live in a reality where an AI can build an entire Android app in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But the biggest tech company on the planet currently can't figure out how to let you add an email address to a dashboard.
It is deeply humbling. But, you know, it highlights a really critical vulnerability in this new AI agent age.
Yeah.
We are all rushing to centralize our workflows. The whole pitch of tools like Gemini Spark is to hand over 80% of our administrative tasks to a single interconnected ecosystem.
Right. We just want the AI to handle it all. Manage the APIs, pull the data, format the report, email it out to the team.
Exactly. But when you abstract all those micro steps away and rely entirely on a single platform's infrastructure, you introduce a massive single point of failure. This bug proves that when an API breaks or a server handshake fails in the back end somewhere, your highly advanced autonomous agent is completely paralyzed.
You can't do anything.
Nothing. The more capable the AI becomes at hiding the complexity of our workflows, the more fragile those workflows become if we don't build in human redundancies. Total reliance on a single ecosystem is a huge vulnerability.
That is a very sobering thought, but definitely a necessary one. So, to bring all of this together for you listening, today's deep dive took us through a pretty massive paradigm shift. We are officially crossing the threshold from the chatbot era into the AI agent age.
We definitely are.
We look at how models like Gemini Flash are breaking the old rules of speed versus quality, letting agents write and fix code autonomously. We saw how AI Studio is democratizing software creation for anyone with an idea. We examine the cyber arms race with Ocean using specialized small language models to fight threats without latency.
Yep.
We discussed Apple proving the absolute necessity of on-device processing to give people real physical mobility. And finally, we grounded it all with the reality that, well, the foundational APIs we rely on are still prone to just breaking.
The fundamental takeaway from all these sources is that technology is no longer just waiting for your instructions. It is actively anticipating your workflow.
And as you adapt to this new environment, you know, the goal isn't to just sit there and fear being replaced by an AI agent. Adapting is about asking yourself, how do I use this tool to become 10x more effective?
Right.
How do you transition from being the person doing the tedious manual execution to the person directing the autonomous systems?
That is exactly the right mindset. But as we make that transition as a society, I do want to leave you with one final, perhaps slightly uncomfortable concept to mull over.
Let's hear it.
We've established that AI agents like Gemini 3.5 Flash are going to take over all the routine entry-level coding, the administrative tasks, and the baseline foundational work.
Right. Yeah, that's a given at this point.
But if the AI is doing all that baseline execution, how will tomorrow's junior workers ever get the hands-on practice they actually need to become the senior experts who oversee these agents?
Oh, wow. That is quite the paradox. If you never learn how the underlying code is structured because the AI just constantly writes it for you, how do you possess the expertise to even know if the AI built the architecture correctly in the first place?
Exactly. That is a massive structural problem the entire industry is going to have to solve over the next few years.
It really is, because having a digital assistant that works entirely in the background is completely life-changing, but only as long as someone still knows how to read the blueprint when the system inevitably breaks.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning, keep exploring, and we will catch you next time.